Let me try to situate you a little bit. Maybe you're going to so many conferences, you don't know exactly where you are at the moment. This is the third Genie Engineering Conference. The first one is at Minnesota, the second at NSF. And this is going to be every 4 months, kind of a touring festival of Genie. At the bottom, it's listing the next four conferences in the series. At Florida International University, in Miami in March, University of Washington at Seattle, University of Utah, Salt Lake City, and then RENCI at Chapel Hill. So those are the current plans. They may change a little bit as to when they are, but this is so you can start planning your futures. We are always looking for more volunteers, people that would like to act as local host for the conference. One thing that's become very apparent to us is this conference is getting quite a bit bigger than it used to be. The registrations, I think we cut off something around 210 this time. That's up from about 150 last time. And it wouldn't surprise me if the one in March is on the order of 300 or so. So this is getting to be a significantly bigger conference as things begin to build up. And I think we're going to have to treat it as such. Okay, the theme of this conference is, Spiral 1 is starting. It is actually starting after years of discussions. We're getting to the point of let's get prototypes up and running. And so there are 29 academic industrial teams, most of whom have people in the room. They're organized, as you will see, into five different and competing control frameworks. Now, we say the word competing. You'll see this doesn't mean sudden death or, pull out the knife and stab the other guy. But there are different ideas about how to do this, and so we've got five different approaches for it. The goal is to get the first integrated prototypes up and kind of limping or staggering in 6 to 12 months. So this is a very, very near-term operation. So what you should come out of this conference is understanding, if you're one of the prototypers, what do I have to do? Who do I have to interface with? What do I have to do, and how on earth am I going to do that and give a demo in 6 months? Actually, a demo in a little less than 6 months would be good. As you'll see, a lot of people will be giving talks here. We have taken a mix of all the different things that, not quite all, but many of the different things that people have hypothesized as being, hey, in that suite of infrastructure, we think there is vehicular wireless, we think there's clusters, we think there's optical networks. We have some of each, and so the goal is, okay, let's try to get this up and integrated in a very early form in 6 to 12 months. So the entire point of this Genie Engineering Conference is to start Spiral 1, right? So if you're one of the prototypers or one of the subcontracts, you should, by the end of this, really clearly know, oh, I'm supposed to be integrating to these people, and this is what I've got to be doing pretty quick in the pretty near-term time frame. So if this isn't clear to you after the next few hours, you want to start grabbing people and saying, I don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing, because this is the beginning. We'd really like to thank HP Labs for hosting this, in particular Dr. Prith Banerjee, who will come in a little bit later and give an official welcome to us all. He's the director of HP Labs and is extraordinarily generous in making this happen here. So thank you to Prith. Jack Brassel, who has pulled off the miraculous feat of being the local organizer from across the continent. Thank you, Jack. Extremely hard thing to do, and it's a beautiful job. Rick McGeer, I'm sure you're here somewhere, Rick. Kind of the minister, either without portfolio or with a whole bunch of portfolios. Very good. And thanks to everybody else at HP who has really worked hard to make this work. We'd also like to thank the National Science Foundation, and I'm not sure if Ty is here yet. I know Susie and Gracie are. Could you guys all stand up and kind of let everybody... Oh, and Carl. Great, and there's Ty. And a number of people in the room are volunteering a lot of their time to run working groups, chair them, to help write documents, and so on. We'd like to thank all of them, but particularly Peter O'Neill, who has stepped up to be one of the new chairs of the substrate working group. And so thank you very much, Peter. And then finally, behind the curtains, Larry Landweber. He must be here somewhere, Larry. He's probably in the other room, you know, still behind. There he is, not yet behind the curtains. He's actually out in the open at the moment. And Henry Ye in the GPO, who's done an awful lot of work on this. I think all of us owe a really big debt of gratitude to what I think of as our founders. These are the people, I wasn't around, it wasn't me, these are the people who had the idea of Genie and worked and worked and worked to try to rough out a conceptual design, to go out to talk to a lot of people. This was a very hard bit of work they did, and I think we all owe them a lot of gratitude because we wouldn't be here, we wouldn't be doing this without these folks who really, it's their idea. Their conceptual design is the starting point for everything we're doing. So it's certainly going to change as we do the prototypes and as we get new ideas, but this really is where it all comes from, is the original planning group who kind of had the idea for Genie. I'd also like to say on behalf of really kind of, I think, a very large number of people, we're very sorry to mourn the passing of Jay LaPro. Some of you may not know that he died a while ago. He is a very good friend to a lot of us, and we deeply miss him. He is also really kind of the perfect Genie person. It's a great shame, and I think we're all going to miss him. Okay, let me give you in kind of overview or cartoon form the conference plan. We're going to be in plenary all today, and the morning is kind of devoted to where are you in terms of control frameworks. We're going to introduce the basic idea of Genie control frameworks and then the five different groups, each of whom is implementing a competing control framework. Hopefully we'll have time for some lunch, and then we're going to figure out the very earliest goal of end-to-end slices across a range of technologies. Then reports on what's been going on with the network science and engineering workshops, which is extremely interesting. And then discussions from Internet2, National Lambda Rail, and the Quilt on how they are participating in this. And I think you'll see they're taking a pretty major role. Then around 5:30 or so, I think that's the end of the official day, we encourage the various control frameworks to huddle. And if you want, you can huddle here a while. But if I were you, I would probably go out to dinner or something and huddle that way. I think that would be more fun. But try to get together, make sure you know each other, you know, start talking about who's going to do what, when. Then tomorrow morning, we come back again in plenary, and all together we'll participate in the control framework working group, have some lunch, and then we'll split out into two parallel sessions, one for the opt-in working group, one for the substrate working group. After that, we will have a so-called networking session. This is the social meaning of networking, not the technical meaning. And I hope everybody will have a good time at that. Then on Thursday, we briefly meet together. Ed Lazowska will be telling us what's going on with the CCC. We'll split out into these two parallel working groups again. One of the groups will have to walk a fairly far distance to another building. Jack will show you how to do that. Have some lunch, and then we'll hear there's very interesting things going on in Asia and in Europe. So we're going to be hearing kind of the current status of that. And we believe we will be, you know, federating in an early version with these activities quite soon. So this is not kind of a discussion of the distant future. This is a discussion of the near future. And then what I think is going to be a fantastic demo of OpenFlow. At that point, you know, those who can still be here, this is your chance to give direct feedback to the GPO about this long list of things we're doing wrong, probably about one-third of which we know about. So please tell us what we should be doing differently or better. And then finally, we'd like to wind up by saying what we're currently thinking of for the second solicitation. I'll touch on that briefly. And that's a chance for you to say, that's an idiotic idea. What you should be soliciting is this, and so forth. Okay, all of you should have received handouts. There is in here a Spiral 1 overview. This is kind of the not terribly big document. This is your handy guide to what are these 29 projects and how do they interrelate. It's a real thumbnail sketch, but this is kind of, you know, the playgoer's guide to what are the different projects that are in this first round in Spiral 1 and how are they linked together. You'll also have the very important poster board assignment. Everybody should have brought posters about their project, which we'll put up, I can't remember when, I guess Wednesday, tomorrow morning, or tomorrow lunchtime. And so that's your assignment, where your poster is going, and then hopefully we'll all figure out what everybody else is doing. And finally, a survey. And a t-shirt and a pen. Thank you very much to HP Labs and EDJ. Okay, I would like to introduce people. Ellen Zagura is, if we're lucky, she's on a flight. The airplanes seem to be pretty intermittent these days. She'll be getting here sometime today. Can the Genie Working Group chairs stand up so everybody can see who you are? I'm not going to read all the names aloud. So all the thinking in Genie is going on in working groups, and these are the chairs. So thank you very much, guys. If there is no thought, we'll hold you personally responsible for the lack of thought. And thank you again to the National Science Foundation folks. And finally, can we get the Genie Project Office staff to stand up? You'll be seeing some of these. I think you've been having email with a lot of them. Heidi, do you want to wave your hand so people know who Heidi is? Kristen? Harry? Mike? Vic? Aaron? And Henry. Oh, and here's Craig. John. Oh, there's John. Sorry. Hidden behind somebody there. Thank you. Okay, so these are the people you grab onto and demand answers to your questions. That is one of their many jobs.
Gently.
You can be gentle to some of the people, but maybe not all of them. There are also a few folks from the Network Science and Engineering Council in the room, and that's fantastic. It's delightful. The Network Science and Engineering Council is figuring out the research agenda for Network Science and Engineering, and that's a very important job. Hopefully you'll know some of the people here, and if you have questions or you want to participate in that, I hope you will grab right onto the people who are in the council and tell them what research you think is interesting and should be included in their agenda. Okay, and now, Susie, if you're willing, we'd love to have a few words from Dr. Suzanne Iacono from the National Science Foundation, from SCIES. She is the program director for Genie, so she is responsible for Genie in the National Science Foundation and hence ultimately responsible for Genie.
A great pleasure to be here with you all this morning. I too would like to give some thanks to people. I'd like to thank HP and Jack for working to allow us to all be here at HP. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. I hope we get to see more of it. I'd like to thank the GPO for all their hard work in putting this together, and Henry Yeh for being in the background to make this happen. I'd like to thank Gracie Narcho at NSF. All of her hard work went into pulling this together. I'd like to thank Ty Zanotti, who is the division director for CNS at NSF, who is actually funding this workshop and all of the Genie activities. Hold on one second. Okay, so I bring you greetings from Washington, D.C. So what you have here is a view of the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument as seen from my kayak on the Potomac River. Of course, the National Science Foundation is actually across the river, and our mission is very broad and expansive. We fund all areas of science and engineering, and we do that through the merit review of over 42,000 proposals each year. So how do we know what to invest in? Well, we have a strategic plan. And of course, the preeminent part of that plan is that we need to foster research at the frontiers. So we're funding all kinds of basic science. But we can't just do that. We have to make sure that we are growing the next generation of scientists and engineers. So we have to also focus on education. And increasingly, NSF and SAIS, my directorate, is funding more and more education programs as we think about the pipeline of young scientists and engineers. We're actually even in size thinking now about K through 12 and its importance. And we also focus on and fund infrastructure. So we have to have the best tools, the best methods, the best test beds for all of our scientists if we're going to actually enable what we call at NSF transformative research. We actually have an office of cyber infrastructure at NSF helping to pull together high-performance computing and advanced networking, thinking about data issues, data preservation, that kind of thing. And of course, this is the area under which Genie falls. It is infrastructure for transformative research. And of course, we have this role of stewardship. We have to make sure at NSF that all of these areas are funded and that none of them are left out, because we believe that they are critically interdependent if we are going to move science forward over the next few decades. Okay, we do this with a budget. We get that budget from Congress. They appropriate our funds. And we have here a chart for our request for fiscal year 09. And you see that our request is $6.8 billion. We're already in fiscal year 09. That started October 1st. But we have we're on a continuing resolution. And so we do not have great hope that we will actually get this $6.8 billion. Why, for those of you who are DC wonks, would you like to fathom a guess? It's an election year, folks. And so we will most likely stay on a continuing resolution through the election, through the inauguration, and then we'll have new people in Congress, and maybe they'll think about NSF. But we're not operating with the assumption that we will get these funds. And so what does this mean for size? Okay, so in fiscal year 2008, we had only an $8 million increase over what we had received in 2007. So basically, we're in a flat budget scenario. We have this wonderful request for fiscal year 09. 19% increase for size. Wouldn't it be wonderful? Again, we're not counting on actually getting those funds. And this is even though we have authorizing legislation called the American Competitiveness Initiative, the America Competes Act, that would like to see NSF double its budget over the next N years. Despite this, we are responsible at NSF. SAIS is responsible for about 87% of the federal support for basic research in computer science. Okay, so I just want to show you the structure of the Directorate for Computer and Information Science. Jeanette Wing is the head of this directorate. She's from CMU, and so she's at NSF as a rotator heading up the directorate. We have three divisions, CCF, which is focused on foundations of computing, algorithms, software engineering, CNS, and we have Ty back in the back of the room, who is the division director for our systems division. And then IIS that incorporates thinking about people and how people use computing. And also information and AI, that kind of thing. So we have a number of core programs. I'm not going to explain those to you at this time. But we also have cross-cutting programs that cross over all of these divisions. And you see down here at the bottom, Network Science and Engineering, which we have dubbed NETSE. Okay, so before I go on, I just want to take a second to talk about the kind of science that we fund at NSF. So a lot of people, when they talk about basic science, it's in opposition to applied research, right? And often we think about this in a linear fashion. So people work in the lab, they come up with some perhaps interesting ideas, they throw it over the wall, and somebody picks it up, develops it, starts a company, right? But Stokes, back in 1997, came up with another way of thinking about science. And so he has this nice little matrix where you can think about research as inspired by, yes, fundamental understanding, investigator-driven curiosity, but also considerations of use. How would anyone ever use this? Of what value is it to society? So we have up here in this upper left-hand box Niels Bohr, who didn't care how the structure, his discovery of the structure of atoms would ever be applied to anything. All he cared about and was driven by was fundamental understanding of that phenomenon. And then down here we have Edison, who didn't really care about science. He could have gotten the Nobel Prize for discovering the electron, but all he cared about was illuminating the world. Okay, and then we have this other cell, the so-called Pasteur quadrant, where you have someone like Louis Pasteur who cared about the science underlying the phenomenon of disease, that is, what causes disease, as well as how do you cure that disease. And so he was able to find out and develop then vaccines that could cure things later on, like smallpox and cholera. Okay, so this is a slide that Jeanette Wing always shows, and I think that it illustrates this need to understand both the science and the engineering of networks. So back in 1970, we could draw on a napkin the ARPANET. There were so few nodes. In 1980, we could plot the nodes on a map. Okay, but by 1999, our networks were so complex that we had to think about how we would even visualize them and what were the most important dimensions to visualize were we to do that. And of course, during this time, we've gone from modems and mainframes to sensor nets and mobile computing and cloud computing. And then, of course, how we use these networks has changed greatly from simple email to collaborative systems to a world that's basically dependent on its networks to function, whether it's finance or communications, education. All of these things benefit people. And then, of course, we have a lack of understanding about some of the more evil things that can happen on our networks. So Jeanette poses this very fundamental question to the community. Is there a science for understanding the complexity of our networks such that we can engineer them to have predictable or adaptable behavior? So you see, again, there is this desire to look at the science, understand the underlying dynamics of our networks and how they work, as well as wanting to be able to engineer them to do the things that we want them to do. And so we consider networks very, very broadly, from the substrate up through the internet layers, through the top layers where there are people using applications like YouTube and MyFace. Okay, so it was a call to arms to the community. Can you develop a compelling research agenda for understanding these evolving complex networks? All right, so at SISE, we've developed a strategy for how we're going to work through this over the next few years. And so we've developed a new program. It subsumes some of the former programs that we had in SISE. It's also called NETSI. And you can look at the, this is actually a webcast of the kickoff on September the 5th. But you can also look at the solicitation to see what that's about. We want to foster a community-based research agenda because we want to be able to do science that has never been done before. So remember, we have this mission to do transformational, leading-edge science at the frontiers. We must do that. We want to invest in and encourage experiments on our existing network infrastructure. SISE has invested in network infrastructure over the years. This is not new, what we're doing here. This is an advance building on what has come before. And so we want to plan a suite of novel experimental infrastructure, but leveraging what currently exists. Okay, so we take a partnership approach to this. NSF, remember, has all those discovery, learning, and infrastructure missions, so we need to develop new programs. We need to provide the best infrastructure that we possibly can for our researchers. And so what we've done is we've funded the Computing Community Consortium, and Chip said that Ed Lazowska is going to be here Thursday morning to talk about that. They're doing lots of interesting things, including chartering the Network Science and Engineering Council, which represents the community and has spent the last number of months through a series of workshops trying to develop this research and education agenda. We also fund the Gini Project Office, and we fund them because they're engineers. We do not have engineers of that skill and caliber at NSF, so we cannot do the work of the GPO. So it's important that we have the best in the world doing this. And so we fund them so that, you know, they try to understand what the requirements are and translate these into working prototypes. Okay, so we have this kind of waterfall idea that we should have a research agenda. We should know what the research questions are for which we would like to use this infrastructure. That is, we need to understand the science story. Once we understand what these experiments are that might drive the functionality of experimental infrastructure, and then we need to prototype what this infrastructure might look like. And today, we really do not know. As Chip says, we're at the very beginning of Spiral 1. There's this nice competition among approaches, and we just do not know today. We cannot really predict how this will work out. But we've accomplished a lot this past year since the last Gini Engineering, or the first Gini Engineering Conference at the University of Minnesota. So the GPO is up and running, fully staffed. We have all these wonderful systems engineers that are going to do or be responsible for all the engineering work that we need to have done. Contributions from Internet2 and NLR. This is terrific. And the GPO has announced 29 development and prototyping awards, which will work together in 5 clusters. And of course, we've had many Gini Engineering conferences and tons of visits and talks and all kinds of outreach to around the globe, basically. And I want to thank all the people from around the globe who have come here today. Okay, so as Chip said, Spiral 1 has now begun. This is an exciting juncture going forward. We have great expectations. It's an exciting moment in time. So where do we go from here? Well, partnerships, partnerships, partnerships. NSF and the GPO cannot do this by themselves. It's just impossible. It's too big. We want to work with industry. It is critically important that we do so. We need to work with other federal agencies in the U.S. government. We need to work with our international partners, the funding agencies around the globe. We need to get access to universities in the U.S. We need to work with the CIOs. We need to work with the regional network people to make this happen. We also need to work very hard on integrating and producing some functional prototypes. And so we have these five approaches, but we still need additional work, and hence there will be more solicitations like the first one, focused on some things, hopefully, like usability from the experimenter's point of view, security and end-user opt-in, which is always an issue. Okay, so I just want to leave you with this last thought in pondering our future. So I'm from the social informatics world, and so we care very much about embedding human values in the artifacts that we use on a day-to-day basis. And so can we understand the science behind our networks so that we can engineer them to provide privacy, for example, when everybody knows where you are, or when everyone has access to databases about everything about you. With wearable computing, I could look out here if I had my computer here, and I could match faces to names, and I could know how much you owe on your mortgage, and other kinds of information. And do we, living in a virtual world, how would we actually do that? There have been conferences like this that have been held completely virtually in World of Warcraft. So how would you like to do that instead of meeting here face-to-face? Or how could we do that and still, there's people applauding, right? So the asocial people are, or I don't know, maybe it's more social. My kids say that it's all true. And then even beyond avatars, you have a situation where you can have holograms of yourself and you can participate with others who are distributed around the globe. This is distributed dance. Ruzhna Baichi, former AD of SAIS, who works with her daughter on this kind of research. And so what I hope and pray is that we'll be able to develop networks of the future that will ensure us of having human values embedded in them also. So I want to thank you. I'm going to be here for the next few days, so if you have any questions, I can take them offline.
Let me introduce Jack Brassel, and thank you again, Jack, for everything. It's kind of an amazing accomplishment.
Okay, good morning, all. I would just like to say a few words about logistics for the rest of the conference. We'll probably repeat most of this information as we're going along, because some of it gets a little bit complicated. So first of all, we're actually in HP's corporate headquarters. So the GEC conference just got too big for the traditional HP Labs conference facilities, which many of you have visited before and even given talks in. So we are guests. I am, in fact, a guest as well. So let's, first of all, please try to mind the natives. I understand that they're very busy for all kinds of reasons, including the fact that HP's fiscal year actually ends the end of this week. So the best way to help them is actually to stay away from them. So if you need to get out and walk around, the best places to do that are either out in front if you really need to walk, or probably even better, just step past where we have the food set up in the foyer in the atrium area, which is a very pleasant garden to sit in. If you need, basically, if you need any help, come and see me. In particular, if you need a private conference room, we have some available, not too many, because we're using most of them. But ask me to find one for you, and we can set that up. What I would just prefer you don't do is just wander into what appears to be an empty conference room, because I can assure you that it's booked. Also, if you need to walk around and see what's going on in HP, just ask me and I will escort you, particularly if you ever think about going off the level, level A here of this building. I know that there are cool things here, like if you're into gadgets, there's a museum upstairs, so you can go and see every HP calculator ever produced. And if you really need to see that, I will take you to see that. But please ask me and I'll go along for. And that'll actually get you back, which is important too. So here is the layout of the building where we are. And let's see. We are now sitting in this auditorium, and you came in through the lobby through this entrance. We're going to use for the rest of the conference three separate breakout rooms in this building. Right behind us here, back here, two of the rooms are, I think those are Akita and Acapulco, these two rooms. And the way that we'll get there is just leave through these doors, go out to where the food is, turn right and go down the hall, and it's the next right. A very small number of us later will have to kind of go back to the far side of the building. Let's see if I can get it here to Abilene, which is another small breakout room we'll be using. More or less, we would prefer if you stay to this part of the building. If you peek over here and over here, you'll see that that's cube land and people are hard at work. Okay. For the sake of your physical fitness, we are going on an excursion, or at least two groups of us who will be going to breakout sessions, one tomorrow, one Thursday. Those are actually in the HP Labs building, up in Building 5, up the hill, in the Spyglass conference room. So if you end up going to a working group which says Spyglass next to it, get prepared for a little bit of a hike, because in the end, this will be the fastest way to get there. So what we will do is 15 minutes prior to the breakout sessions that will be held in Spyglass, we will meet out in the lobby, and I will escort the entire group up the hill, and we should give ourselves at least 10 minutes to get up the hill to the other building. And it's complicated, so we're going to try to move as a large group. So right now, we have on the agenda Wednesday at 1:45, the substrate working group breakout, and Thursday at 8:45 a.m., the OMIS working group breakout. It is possible that we will change that, but for right now, that's the plan. We might do a headcount to see how many folks we have to move to the other building. There's simply no other conference room large enough for maybe 75 or so folks in this building. If there's a problem, let us know, and we'll make other arrangements to get you to where you need to be. Okay, so this is give you a sense of the complexity of this excursion. We are down here in the 3000 Hanover building, and somehow we have to make our way all the way up to here, where the Spyglass building is. So that'll be an adventure, and we'll just see how it goes. Most employees just walk through the building, which actually is the fastest way, but I think moving a group of 75 or so through this building is probably not the right thing to do. So we'll hopefully it won't rain, and we'll be go for a little outside walk. Okay, if you have not already figured out how to use external internet access, the first thing we were supposed to do, so we follow all the rules, is to read and sign the acceptable use policy, which is in the binder out at the registration desk in the lobby. So please try to get to that. Now, it would take most of the rest of the conference to read what the attorneys have written. So maybe you could just skim it, and everyone who is registered for the conference by the actual registration date, your name is out there, so just initial or sign by your name. The SSID, as indicated on this easel, is Genie-HP. You should get reasonably good service in the room. And the web key is 16 lowercase ASCII letter Bs. And that is actually mostly to protect the HP corporate people as opposed to introduce any kind of security. Let's see. So when we move into the other room, for those going to the breakout sessions in wireless, we actually have an entirely different authentication mechanism. And when you go out and you sign your sheet, sign your initials next to the wireless sign-up sheet, you will see that you have a unique username and password to be used in that other building, because we're entirely separate systems. And in the case of that building, the AUP agreement is something you'll click through online. Wireless seems to be working okay for now, unless I hear people complain. Whew, we made it this far. Good. If there are any problems, just come and, you know, I'll be here. Just come and get me, and we'll get on it. And if you're absolutely desperate to get a connection, there's a ProCurve 24-port hub in the back of the room, so you could go right to a wired connection. Just go easy on the wireless. There really is a limited amount of bandwidth, and we're using old infrastructure in this building. Okay, questions? I'm sorry, those are ASCII, yeah, so it's 128-bit web key. If you have a problem, just go to the back of the room, I'll help you out. Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks. Again, thank you for everything, Jack. It's a tremendous amount of work, and we really appreciate the hospitality of HP for this. Okay, so now let's launch in. And as you might expect from a management type, I'm going to give a management type perspective. Right after that, it's going to start getting quite a bit more technical. So this is kind of just the general orientation. I'll remind you, this is PowerPoint you've been seeing now for a year, 2 years, I'm not sure exactly how long. There's kind of three fundamental parts to the Genie concept. One, this is a suite of infrastructure that's very deeply programmable. So in the internet, for example, people program the end hosts. Now we're just getting to the point where maybe you can put a program in your cell phone. But this is starting to drive the programmability deep into the servers, you know, the server farms within it, the clouds, the routers along the way, the base stations, and so on. So every part of this infrastructure is conceived as being programmable. The second major aspect is it is a shared suite of infrastructure that uses virtualization to kind of give you your slice, your containment in which your experiment runs. So virtualization plays a very large role in this suite of infrastructure. And the third is, it is fundamentally federated. So there are many different kinds of technology in this infrastructure, many different suites owned and operated by different groups. It's not one big monolithic thing owned and operated by one group. So it's kind of like the internet in that regard. Different parts are owned and operated by different groups. The fundamental plan for prototyping for the next 3 or 4 years is spiral development. And to some extent, this is the miracle of buzzwords, spiral development. But this is the way I think many of us have done large projects for a long, long time in the computer field or the large system field. We know we want to go kind of over there. We kind of know what we want to do, but it's going to be hard to get there. And the way we're going to do it is, we're going to pick a very near-term goal, implement it, use it in prototype form, get some idea of what we like and what we don't like, and then we're going to do it again. Okay, and so we're trying to get to this kind of out-there goal, but programmatically, you're going to see a series of very near-term steps, the first of which is spiral one. The next major part of this is, this is fundamentally federated. And so that means the different suites of infrastructure that are represented in this room need to be federated together. So they're not standalone, they're not islands, but at the other extreme, they're not all owned and operated by a single group. So within the United States, we're going to start linking together different projects and different infrastructure suites. And then as soon as possible, we are going to begin the earliest federation with international groups, because that's going to take a long time to get right. So this is what's going to dominate our thinking for about the next 3 years, spiral development and making federation work properly. Let me take a brief break if I can, because we're very fortunate to have Dr. Prith Banerjee here, who is the head of HP Labs and our host. And I'd like to thank you, Prith. Let me briefly introduce you if I can. Prith is a senior VP of HP and director of the labs. He was the dean of the College of Engineering at the University of Illinois at Chicago and previously a professor at Northwestern and Urbana-Champaign. So he does understand the academic side. He's also an entrepreneur. Is it two companies? So he's kind of, you know, a triple menace in this. And then just to add icing to the cake, he's a fellow of the AAAS, the ACM, and the IEEE, which is quite an accomplishment. So again, thank you very much, Prith.
Thank you for the introduction, and a very strong welcome to all of you to HP and HP Labs. I wish I could have attended the entire day's session. This sounds so exciting. A lot of terrific technology is being discussed today, and so many great people, some of whom I actually know in person, attending the conference. Let me very briefly mention what is going on at HP Labs today. So HP Labs is the corporate research arm for HP, the company. HP today is a $130 billion large IT company. And HP invests about $3.6 billion every year on research and development in a wide range of products and services, starting from imaging and printing devices to personal systems, laptops, notebooks, to server storage, networks, and also now in services. HP Labs is the central R&D arm for HP. Much of the R&D happens in the different divisions. Those are the real products that you see and you use every day. But the HP Labs is a corporate R&D arm. We have about 600 researchers located in 7 worldwide locations. Palo Alto is our major site. And we have a lot of folks in Bristol, and we have between 20 to 30 researchers in our other 5 locations in Russia, China, Japan, India, and Israel. Last year, we went through a very interesting reorganization process, as part of which we organized ourselves around 23 separate labs, each lab having a particular focus. And as part of this, we also made a transition away from doing a large number of very interesting but small projects into a smaller number of big bets, is what we call ourselves. So we have identified about 22 such large big bets around 5 big themes. And the 5 big themes are the challenges of information explosion. And again, that ties in very well to what is being discussed today. Cloud computing and cloud services. Content transformation, transforming content from the digital world to the analog and physical world and back. Intelligent infrastructure. HP is, after all, an IT infrastructure company. And the 5th area is that of sustainability. The networking is a very key component of what we do in HP Labs. And there's a couple of the big bets that we have made, these 22 large projects, actually directly apply to networking. One of the key things that we have embraced in HP Labs is this concept of open innovation. HP Labs used to partner with universities even in the past, but this year we have gone in a very big way to partner with universities, and in March this year, we announced a program for innovation research program, asking our university partners to send proposals along these 5 themes and these 23 separate labs that we have. In response to this, we got 450 outstanding research proposals. It was a real shame that we didn't have the resources to fund a lot of them. But we received these 450 proposals from 200 universities in 38 countries, truly worldwide participation. And from that, we funded 41 projects in, I think, 14 countries, 28 universities. So fantastic initial foray for HP Labs in the world of open innovation. The other way we are participating in open innovation is through partnership with companies like, for example, we just announced a Cirrus testbed for cloud computing, where we are partnering with between HP, Yahoo, and Intel, and three other university partners, University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, and IDEA in Singapore, where each of these centers are going to provide between 1,000 to 4,000 cores towards a cloud computing testbed. The third aspect of open innovation is partnering with external agencies, such as the National Science Foundation, and this is a great example of this, DARPA and others, and to working with these external agencies to influence the research agenda of our partners, our universities, companies, and us, and working with them, jointly putting resources into these really big bet ideas, and GenAI is just one such example. We have had an excellent, successful result of this open innovation with respect to this. First, we already mentioned about the Cirrus testbed, and I think we are about to include a few other partners as part of the Cirrus testbed, and I hear that University of Illinois Chicago, the National Center for Data Mining, is interested in participating, so that's great. We have had some significant external funding that we have been successful with funding from DARPA and NSF and other places. But we just got HP and HP Labs people got a significant funding from DARPA this week. And then the most important thing is that HP Labs this week is proud to announce that we are now part of the National Lambda Test Rail. So this is a great program. It allows researchers from HP Labs to partner with the top research institutions across the country and across the world, a really high-speed networking effort, the National Lambda Rail that I'm sure all of you are aware of, but HP Labs is delighted to participate in that effort. With that, I will I'll conclude. If you have any quick comments, I'll be happy to answer them. I'll try to swing by during the lunch break if I can, and I welcome you all to HP Labs. Thank you all for coming. Continue with the rest of the meeting.
Well, thank you. Thank you again, Prith. We deeply appreciate the hospitality and the generosity. And I think going forward, academic, industrial, very deep ties between academic and industry are going to be one of the key parts of Gini prototyping. I think HP is very well known for its incredible inventiveness and also its openness. And so this is the perfect kind of company to be very, very deeply involved. We would encourage the academic members of the community to really think about deeply involving yourself with companies such as HP as we begin to start building out the prototypes of Gini, because that's the way it's really going to play out. Thank you again very much, Britt. Okay, we're going to be getting into a bit of technical detail a little bit after my talk. And my bubble cloud picture, which you can see here, there's a whole bunch of different bubbles, wireless, backbone, and so on. When you start getting one stage closer to engineering, wind up being what we're currently calling aggregates. So they turn into rectangles rather than bubbles. And there's a number of different kinds of them. So you'll be hearing first an overview of these and then specific talks about a number of these. In fact, really all of them in the Gini prototyping as time goes on. Aaron Falk will be introducing this in kind of a more level of technical detail. This is provisional. We expect you know, as we begin to get better understanding, as these five competing clusters really get some experience implementing stuff, this is going to change. So this is a reference architecture for discussion. But here's kind of the basic primitives. So this is the kind of stuff that we would like to see demonstrated in an integrated way in 6 to 12 months. Okay, it's very nice to look at pictures, but actually you're on the hook to demonstrate this in 6 to 12 months. One of the key things that Genie has to do is resource discovery. So somehow a researcher needs to know what's out there in this federated world that I can get my hands on, because I want it. I want to program it. So somehow that has to be figured out and demonstrated in Spiral 1. The next thing the researcher does is, please create me a slice that spans this kind of different aggregates owned and operated by different groups using different technologies. For example, a computer cluster through a backbone into Metro Wireless. Please demonstrate that in 6 to 12 months. Experimentation. Okay, now I got that stuff. It's in a slice. I want to put my software in there, program it, debug it, make it work. This one probably we can't demonstrate in 6 to 12 months. In this concept, as experiments get bigger and bigger, as they get more and more real-world users, you need to be able to grow them. So you should be thinking, how are we going to do this? How are we going to have experiments that go on for a year or two and that can grow as more users join them? In short order, we're going to need to federate between the NSF Genie stuff and international efforts that are somewhat similar and possibly commercial efforts. Right, so we need to figure out how to make federation work at that level. This is going to be a tough problem, and I think we should start now because it's going to take us several years before we really have a good workable solution on this one. And then finally, there's some underlying management infrastructure behind all this. If the different parts are owned, operated, provisioned by different groups, how do these groups interact? How do you do shutdown if you need to do shutdown? I don't think any of us have any very clear answers now, but over the next few years, we do have to figure this out. And in fact, there are groups funded to begin working on this. Okay, the fun part is now beginning, which is start your engines. You know, it's time to get this stuff up and running in its very earliest form. We were exceptionally lucky to get very, very handsome donations from Internet 2 and National Lambda Rail over the summer. These are kind of apples and oranges, but each one of them is an amazing donation. And better yet, this isn't just kind of a gift. These people are actively participating in shaping Genie, which is the most important part, because I think these are going to be major parts of this prototype system that we're building. And so we've got, you know, the key technical people here and are going to be giving talks at 5 p.m. about what they are doing and how you can interact with them over the next year. Okay, how have we structured Spiral 1? The Genie Project Office identified two critical risks in Genie. And you may realize there's more than two risks in Genie. You know, there's quite a few. But there's two that are absolutely critical. People have hypothesized a control framework that can do all this stuff, that lets you do resource discovery, lets you, you know, configure this, yada, yada, yada. We've never seen one of those things. We've seen things that can do part of it. And you'll see the various control frameworks, each of which can do part of the job. But we've never seen a control framework that does the Genie thing. The second one is, a key part of this is end-to-end slices across multiple technologies. We've never seen one of those, right? If we can't do both of these, then we can't do Genie. It's pretty simple. So the goals of Spiral 1 are, show me a control framework that can do the Genie thing. Now, it's in very early prototype form, but show us that this can actually work. That's goal number one. Goal number two is, show us end-to-end slices across a range of technology. Okay, so two goals. That's it for Spiral 1. Those are the two main goals. This is a kind of an unfortunate adventure in color. I probably shouldn't pick the room, you know, the color for our house, but basically we've got kind of a reference architecture, a system decomposition, and that's primarily to allow us all to talk to each other so that we can really argue rather than just kind of, you know, beat around the bush. We'll be able to argue specifics about we want to do it this way, no, we want to do it that way, and we can talk in terms of a reference architecture. And then we have organized these 29 projects. Most of them fit into one of five control clusters. And so your job in a project is figure out what cluster you're in, figure out what the control framework for that cluster is, and figure out how to integrate. You've got two integration jobs. And I think of these as you've got to integrate vertically. If you have an optical network or you have a wireless sensor field or something, you've got to have a control framework control you. And so you'll probably get a little bit of software, some, you know, wrapper software from your control framework, and you'll tailor it to what you're doing. But you've got to have it so that you can be controlled by an overarching control framework. And you have to integrate horizontally. This is kind of the equivalent of the data plane. You've got to be able to pass stuff out of your system into a slice across, you know, into a different technology. And so that will be another project in your cluster that you've got to integrate with. So you integrate with the control framework, and then you integrate horizontally so you can get data across these different projects. And oh, by the way, you know, since you're so busy, will you please design Genie as you do it? Okay, now my firm belief, I may be wrong, but my firm belief is systems people do their best thinking when they're building things. And so build away, but we also want you to participate in the working groups and design this as you gain the insight from these prototypes. Okay, here's how it should be. Write it down. The system engineers will help you write it down, right? But as you realize how the design should be, we're going to type it up, and those will become working documents that explain the design. There are certainly going to be some large project challenges here. And those of you that have worked on large projects know immediately what they are. If you have not worked on a large project, let me tell you, you are going to have to communicate, communicate, communicate. You are relying on other people, and they are relying on you. And believe me, they're not going to do the things you think they're going to do, and it is symmetric. Believe it or not, you are not going to be doing things, and they're going to get really mad at you. Right? I mean, this is sure to happen. So really, talk a lot with the other people in your control framework. One of the reasons we made control frameworks is so you don't have to talk to 29 groups, but you do have to talk to everybody in your control framework. And I would suggest, as a strategy for success, make some very simple, clear deadlines. You know, our goal is to do X, where you define that, by this date. Because if you're a little bit hazy about that, some people will go this way, some people will go that way. So integrate early, integrate often, and have pretty clear goals that are pretty easy to meet. Don't get fancy now, because it's going to be hard enough just to do the bare bones. Now, realistically, we expect some of the 29 subcontracts are not going to make progress. We hope they do, but kind of the law of averages says probably some of them, for whatever reason, are not really going to progress during the course of this next year. So we structured everybody's subcontracts as one base year, which is funded, and two option years. Right? Those projects that consistently do not make progress, we're going to warn you, and we're going to kind of notify you and tell you and try to help you. But in the end, if you're not making progress, your options are not going to get funded, and that money will go to teams that are making progress. Okay, so this is not a grant. We said up front, this is a subcontract. So we encourage everybody, you know, do your best to make progress, and if you're starting to fall behind, start talking to your GPO system engineer. It's really good to start that conversation early. I will say we are not planning any DARPA-style sudden death, you know, Survivor Island kinds of things. right? So that, you know, we're not going to go through a down select and there's just going to be one control framework. We're just going to let this thing evolve as it does. We don't know what the outcome will be. It might all merge into one control framework. It might wind up as two different control frameworks. We'll take it as it goes. But, you know, I would encourage you to keep making forward progress, you know, visible forward progress. Can we do it? I mean, this is obviously a very hard undertaking. I believe we can do it. This is a community that has consistently been able to do this in the past. Actually, we have kind of one of the grand masters in the audience, Bob Kahn. You know, Bob, I don't know how you managed to do this, but, you know, I believe this community can do it again. And so, yes, you know, but let's go for it. 6 to 12 months. This isn't a let's do it in 24 months or 36 months deal. Okay, I've got a few suggestions for how to do this. Basically, talk within your control framework. Make sure you're talking to the other teams in your control framework. You know, it might be a weekly teleconference, it might be an active email list, but find some way that you keep talking and talk to GPO system engineers. There is a chance that you will not be a good match into your control cluster, your control framework cluster, or you may just have a very dysfunctional control framework cluster. Right? I mean, these things certainly happen, and it is not your fate to go down with the ship. You know, this is not, you've been assigned this control framework cluster, and, you know, so long, sucker. If you see a problem that's coming up, if you're not fitting, if it's not working out, please talk to your GPO system engineers. Okay? You can change clusters. We tried to assign things that looked kind of plausible and that worked out. But for whatever reason, if you think you should be in a different one, you know, talk to us. Better to do that early rather than at the last second, because if you do it at the last second, it just isn't going to work. Okay, a couple things. I'm almost done. You know, what is going on right now? Well, two of the really big things are the regional networks in the U.S. are beginning to become fairly heavily involved. And so we're very fortunate to have Internet 2 and National Lambda Rail as kind of full participants in this process. I think we'll see a lot of regional networks do the same kind of thing. And they're very interesting if you're into experimental infrastructure, because they form quite a rich topology. In fact, it's possible to interconnect them without going through backbones. And so, you know, there are kind of a lot of novel and interesting architectures that could be possible there. They may also be good co-location spaces for advanced equipment. Jen Leisure is here, I believe, and she's going to be giving a talk at 5 o'clock today as well to introduce the Quilt, which is an organization of these regional networks, and kind of to start the dialogue of how is this all going to work. Another thing that seems to be starting up is Dave Farber is kind of the point guy here. Under the umbrella of this project, can we get national research spectrum, RF spectrum, say, suitable for cognitive radio research? One of the things we in the Genie Project Office would like to do is to have universities create software radios, cognitive radios, and be able to freely move them to other universities and have people there be able to use them. If we can get nationally available spectrum that is licensed for this kind of thing, research use, this will be a very big deal for people interested in radio networking. So if you are in this community and want to participate, please contact Dave Farber or Srini Session at CMU, or Doug Sickert, or Joe Evans, I think, is interested. Joe, if you're here, can you? Yep, there he is. Wave your hand. I think we have a good shot at it, and I think we should go for it. Another major thing that's going on right now is in August, the Genie Project Office had a meeting with about a dozen CIOs of major research campuses. The CIOs are kind of in charge of all the IT, including all the networking on campus. We wanted to tell them Genie prototypes will be coming very soon to your campus. They're going to be touching your campus. Sometimes they're going to be inside your campus. This is kind of a heads up. And this is what Genie is about and so on. And oh, by the way, are any people interested in being very early adopters? We want people who about 12 months from now will begin to build out Genie through their campus. So through their wiring closets, into, you know, the various computer rooms, and hopefully direct access to students on campus. And so we've got about five CIOs who seem quite interested in doing this in about the 12-month time frame. In addition, we're interested in kind of the policy parts of this. As this begins to be, you know, a bigger and bigger deal with a lot of real users involved, what kinds of issues are going to come up? You know, letters from RIAA and so forth. Can we get kind of a uniform approach to these problems in place in the next year or so, so that we can build this out fast without everybody having to do their own policies for their own campuses? So these are in the works. I think there'll be a lot coming out of these in the next 3-4 months. So that's the kind of time frame for this. There are some workshops currently being contemplated. Paul Barford and Jim Griffin are interested in instrumentation and measurement as a workshop, and that's of great interest to the GPO. And Matt Bishop is organizing a specific workshop on security for Genie and security research enabled by Genie at UC Davis. I think he's thinking of around the January timeframe. Again, the GPO is very interested in the security aspects of this. This was quite weak in our first solicitation. Okay, almost at the end. We expect, nothing is written in stone, but we expect to issue our second solicitation in December. It would follow about the same trajectory, we think, as the first one. So it would issue in December. You'd have about a few months to write proposals, hopefully very short proposals, which would be due in February. They would be peer-reviewed, very much the way the first round was peer-reviewed. We believe there's about $3.5 million a year for 3 years for funding for this solicitation. Again, nothing is written in stone. You know, this is completely subject to the availability of the funds, but that's kind of what we're thinking about. Both existing Genie participants and new participants are encouraged to participate, you know, to write proposals. So we don't discriminate against you or for you, depending on whether you're already in Genie. We'd be very happy for people who are in Spiral 1 to write another proposal and get more funding. Very strong preference will be given to joint academic industrial teams. To the academics in this room, industry is very, very important, because as this begins to scale up in the prototyping, it's really only industry that's going to be able to make, you know, substantial, sizable prototype systems. And so getting industry really involved very early is important. And if you're clever, you can probably get them to give you something. So, you know, you should always have that in the back of your mind. We probably will also maybe require, maybe just strongly prefer, that you show that you are talking to your campus IT people. In particular, a letter from the CIO would be very desirable, because they have a major role to play in building out the prototype infrastructure. We discovered in solicitation one, a lot of people never told their IT department what they were going to do. And their IT department was surprised when they found out, you know, what's required. Sometimes the regional networks upstream of the campus were kind of surprised when they found out. So this time I think we want the infrastructure people fully involved right from the beginning. Okay, here's our thoughts on what we will solicit. We're going to discuss this Thursday, and so really a back and forth would be a good thing. But we know for sure we want security design analysis. We've got to have it. We didn't get a lot of great proposals in solicitation one. We're going to work very hard in solicitation two. Experimental workflow, that is kind of the user interface. How does a researcher use this? We've been concentrating on the two major risks, the control framework and the slicing. Well, somebody, you know, you have to be able to use this thing. So that's going to be a major focus. Another one is instrumentation and measurement. The GPO firmly believes this is, you know, of core importance to have good instrumentation, measurement, data archiving, data sharing, data analysis. So that will be important. Early tries at international federations and other good ideas, right? There's always things that we didn't think of that you did. All right, here's my personal view. I think this is the time to move fast. The faster you can move, the more you are going to shape what's happening. A lot is going on right now. A lot is going on around the world. If you can do things a month or two faster, it is going to go the way you are doing it rather than the way somebody else is doing it. So move fast. This is an amazing time, but if you dawdle, you know, you're gone. The second is think big. People are used to doing things in their lab, or, you know, me and my old friend over there. There is really a chance that over the next couple of years, we will start to build this out through tens or maybe hundreds of campuses, right, across the U.S. So think big. How would your ideas work if they were very widely adopted, used in a lot of campuses, used by lots of real people? Three, work together. A typical PI, you know, they rely on themselves, they can do it, they know they can control the world. You're not going to get very far in this kind of endeavor. You've got to work with other people. And if you do, I think you'll be amazed at how fast things happen, right? Because they will be doing things and you will be doing things. Zoom. And finally, you know, you're going to get something of an impression in this meeting that, you know, hey, maybe you're a cog in a great big machine, right? There's the vast genie enterprise. Well, in fact, you know, A, obviously you're not a cog, but B, this whole thing is going to turn out the best if you are yourself, right? Don't try to fit into some little box that you think is the box you should be in, right? You are the best people around, so do it your way, right? We really hope there's like a lot of creativity in this and a lot of people expressing themselves. That's how it's going to work the best. All right, so that's it. The goal is in 6 to 12 months, we will have kind of a very shaky national scale prototype of integrated end-to-end stuff. Actually, we'll have multiple, right? If we're lucky, every control framework cluster will have something up and staggering integrated on kind of a national scale really early. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be anywhere near perfect, right? This is going to be the very earliest prototype. But when we have it, we can look at it and say, oh, I get it. Well, this part is terrible. We don't want that. This part is really good. Okay? And then we'll begin the second spiral once we get to that part. But we want to have the whole thing up and staggering as fast as possible. Okay, I'm going to skip questions. You know, all of us are going to be around the whole time, so grab us during breaks and so on. Thank you very much.
All righty, so I'm Craig Partridge, and I'm the guy, the marshal at arms for the rest of the day to try to keep us roughly on track on the agendas.